You're listening to I Wish I Knew That About Songwriting, the internet's nerdiest songwriting podcast.
Hello, welcome to Emily's Help Desk number 3. I'm here with Jamie.
That is right, actually. I am actually here, and we are across the world, across the internet, as always. I'm on Zoom in Australia, so I'm on a slightly different type of mic today, so if I sound different from normal, that's the reason why. And Emily is out there doing her thing in Denver.
Denver, yes, with the lovely American accent. Here we are.
Thank you.
All right. First off, I would like to talk a little bit about what we're doing today. So we have several submissions from one particular listener, and I just want to dedicate this entire episode to him. And so we can go through some of his works and talk about a few things that he does well. Now, this is someone that Jamie knows a bit better than I, so I'd like you to give him a little bit more of a proper introduction.
Since we started this podcast, which a couple of years now, but I think in the last year, I've been speaking with a gentleman called Scott Rustin. That's how you'd know him if you've seen the Instagram, some of the Wild Writer stuff we do on the stories. He was one of the first people to send us a song, one of the first people to send an email, and really kind of dive into how much this show has been helpful. And he's a guy who's got a couple of kids. He's a school teacher, and he just found his love again in his early 40s, as with a couple of people that listen to this. And just he's lit this fire. I remember his first song was something he recorded in his kind of study through his phone. And there was an app or a website that kind of adds instruments for you. So he really did start again. I remember that first email, that conversation. And since then, we've had a song probably every couple of weeks, maybe even more so than that. And he's been so kind in terms of letting us know about the quality of the show, what we talk about. And I'm hearing often from him as to what's landing, what resources he's loving. Emily being one of them, hearing her kind of voice on the show was such a big thing. And I just wanted to do justice to someone who's been propping up this submission from the start. You would hear him in all of the help desks and even probably before that. So Mr. Scott Rustin, I know him as Mark Jones, and he probably won't mind me saying so. But yeah, Mark, this is for you. Today's for you. And we love how much you are diving into your writing, how much time you're investing. And even in a really busy schedule and looking after everything in your life, you find time to enjoy the expression of music. And as you'll hear today, there's been some progress. So that's probably the quick update. I could talk a long time about this gent.
Yes, we are here talking about him in particular because it's super interesting how I'm able to pick out so many different things that I've learned from the podcast in his writing. So we want to just showcase him as one of our really good examples, starting with a song called Take Me Away. This is Take Me Away by Scott Rustin.
Love is all I have to give. I'm telling you, I want to live, she said to me. Will you think of me when I'm gone? I swear I won't forget your song, she said to me. But I'm waiting. For you to take me away, far away from here. Take me away, far away. Days of love and fear, will you stay? Will you be here? She said to me. Every time you disappear, I'm filled with hope, I'm filled with fear, she said to me. But I'm waiting. Waiting.
All right, that was Take Me Away by Scott Rustin once again. I want to say one thing that I actually learned from you, Jamie, that I see here in this song. A strong opening. I notice one thing that he does right off the bat, lyric-wise, is he starts with a declaration. And it really pulls me in, and it really shows me right off the bat, ooh, we're gonna go there. Like, there's a very intense romantic declaration immediately, and that hooked me into the song. I have to say, like, really consider what your first words are and what your first impression is going to be. That's so important when it comes to within the context of a song. Or also, for those of you who are at a point where you're playing out a little bit more, those first opening lines at the beginning of your set are going to determine if you're going to be one of those artists that people kind of talk over and mingle during your set, or if they're going to be on the edge of their seat, all eyes on you. So I want everybody to just think about those first words in lieu of this good example.
That's so well put, because I think we can be kind of drawn into just an audio world. That would be kind of Spotify, or especially right now we're drowning in captions and TikTok, and that's warped the industry in some kind of interesting ways, and it's good for opportunities for other people, so I won't talk it down. But in this sense, imagine, as Scott does, as you'll see in our stories, he'll go into a bar and just lay his soul out in front of people that are just there maybe to meet their friends. So if you want to grab people in what I would call like an ethical way, we're not just like shouting at them or saying something deliberately really abrasive or rude just to get to them. You're saying something really heartfelt. And I learned from Ralph Murphy, so I won't take any credit from that, but Ralph Murphy talks beautifully about your two opening lines being the most important in terms of needing to fold in imagery, start to set up your story, and also, as we'll hear a bit later, is how we set up elements of the song that we don't know about yet, but you do have to plant those seeds, and reasonably obviously. You can't subtly plant subconscious seeds, or maybe you can, but in those first two lines, you don't have that many words. So yeah, opening lines are a huge, huge one, and all credit for laying it out early.
I noticed that right away, and then because I was hooked, and I continued listening to the song with the same kind of focus and intention, one thing that I noticed is that you do a really good job here of picking words that phonetically make sense with the melody, instead of going for something that might be a little bit more of a stretch of someone's vocabulary. You settle for, well, you don't even settle, but you opt for really simple words and really simple rhymes. And I think that there's a lot of power in being able to do that, because that opens a lot of space up for you to do interesting things with your melody. When you're keeping your words a little bit more on the simplistic side, it means that you can do more fun things with repetition. You can do a lot with just picking interesting vowels over trying to really push boundaries and reinvent the wheel in terms of the words that you're using and the meaning. I feel like this is a quality that you can find in all kinds of songs that happen to be number one hits. It's just this really speakable quality. Something we talk about a lot is the speakability idea, which means that it's something that's in the common vernacular that you hear people say all the time. And I notice that you go for these phrases that are pretty common that you might say to someone who you're in a relationship with. And they're also phrases that are pretty commonly heard in music. But I think that things like this are cliche for a reason. Like, I don't want people to feel like when they're writing songs, they have to reinvent the wheel all the time. Your job is you have to write a song. It has to sound like a song. It doesn't have to sound like anything other than that. That's your job at the end of the day. And so if you're expressing something, if somebody understands the mood and it comes across and you're using really common vernacular, that's okay. I want to just see people make more songs from start to finish. I think that's important. And just knowing when to stop and stop diving and thinking like, oh, I could make this idea better. And you do a really good job with that. I think that lends to people being more prolific. And in the case of the artist we're talking about today, you've spent extremely prolific. So being able to fall back on some of these like simplistic common speakable phrases that you hear a lot in popular culture or just in conversation, I think is really important to the relatability too of your song.
A few things came up when you were speaking about that, and that's a really good thing to focus on because it breeds a few different ways of thinking about it. So the first one is good job for him, because I think the style of music that he reminds me of, kind of the classical songwriting that's born from the Beatles, but also in some ways kind of elbow, but also pop. And when you have that, when you speak plainly, it's almost needed because you are trying to get things across in a certain amount of syllables and you have a short verse because of the pace of the song. Does a wonderful job of, like you said, leaning into cliches and not avoiding the things that we actually want to hear. And I'm very guilty of always trying to find a really unique lyric or really kind of deep dived version, meaning talking about lyrical deep diving, which you talk about on the show, which is taking your ideas from the surface and down. But there can be extremes to that. And when you go down, you ask a lot of people's attention. So that's a great point there, but you've kind of said that one. Jesus spoke plainly. Something I try and bear in mind when I talk about podcasting or when we're talking about lyrics. I think there's a lot to be said to not deliberately excluding people with vocabulary. And also, as I said, Jesus spoke plainly because he spoke to everyone. He made sure that the things he was saying were easy to translate, meaning you don't complicate what you're saying. You try and do it in a way that's accessible to everyone, whether they're listening to it at a live show, whether they're listening to it walking past or on Spotify. You want them to get what you're saying. So kind of contradictory to what I normally say, which is, how do you find something really interesting or that kind of really deep dive nugget? But those things are really important. And as you said, Emily, like, despite all of us are normally searching for something quite unique and intricate, most of the biggest songs in the world, whether that's what you want from your songwriting, a big song, a pop song, it's up to you. But most of the biggest songs in the world are very clear, very easy to understand. And those that go across countries, across cultures and languages are really simple. So we've talked about that a touch before, but yeah, really interesting that that's what you've come up with, Emily.
Yeah, you know, I think that's something that really stood out to me when I was listening to that song in particular. And I think that something that's important for people to think about, because we're talking about two different camps of writing a lot. I noticed that I tend to fall back on a lot of cliches, and you tend to push a lot of the lyrical deep diving, which is good. One thing that I've thought about more and more in the last year is with deep diving versus saying things that are more speakable and colloquial. When is it appropriate to use either one? And it really depends on what kind of effect you're going for and how your song is structured. And obviously, these things are all subjective and it's art and there's no right answer. But the tried and true thing that I've noticed works extremely well is going for more of your deep diving in the verse and then going for these more broad strokes with your language in the chorus, in the hook, when you want something that's really uncomplicated because you want everybody to be able to sing along with you. And depending on what your career goals are too, it's like, okay, you want everyone to be able to sing along with you. What if you want to have an astronomical career? You want your fans who speak Turkish as a first language to be able to follow you. You want your fans who maybe don't speak English at all to be able to pick up some of the phonetic sounds of what you're saying. These are all things to think about. And then the other thing is it genre appropriate for you to be diving really, really deep? In the example of country music, I think that colloquial language works better. In the example of something that's maybe like trying to push those boundaries a little bit more, like maybe you're more of a conscious rapper and you're really trying to expand people's minds, it might be more appropriate to get a lot more verbose. You know what I mean?
Definitely. And subways and skyscrapers is a way I think about it. And you did a really good job of highlighting the fact of genre specific use of language and lyrics, because it is that. Like, are we trying to hit people in our language, like NF or something, who's really direct and like, okay, this is what I want to say, this is how I want to say it. Whereas subways and skyscrapers for me is that simple thing of, when you're in the verses, you're underground like a subway, you're navigating through quite unique areas and spaces. You're not really sure where you're going, but you know you're underground. You're looking for something, you're searching for something. And then Skyscrapers is that chorus, is when you kind of walk out from the metro or the tube or wherever you are in the world, and you look up and you go, I cannot miss that building. Like, look at that building. It's so clearly what it's supposed to be. There's no mystery to that. So that's a really cool way of tying those two together. And yeah, loads of what you said has kind of scrambled ideas in my head, and hopefully that'll be the same for you guys listening. So get involved with questions or anything you're kind of interested in, because it's really, really rich. So do you have more on that song, or do you want to take us on to the second evolution of Scott Rustin?
I want to continue. I feel like I could talk forever about that, but I think that it comes up in some of these other examples. So let's listen to some more. Up next, we have A Little While, also by Scott Rustin. And it's a good song, and we're listening.
We'll be here for a little while and stay here for some time. I believe in your smile, the way you move through life like a child. Take it back now, take it back now, you try it. Take it back now, take it back now, I believe in you. Like flowers in fall bloom, like summer's in too soon. Like all these things we knew, it's only for a little. Should we stay here inside our minds? We'll fly to a different time. We'll hope to see the sun. We'll dream like when we were young. Take it back now, you try it. Take it back now, take it back now, I believe in you. Like flowers in fall bloom, like summer's end too soon. Like all these things we knew, it's only for a little while.
That was A Little While by Scott Rustin. Right off the bat, the first thing that I love is that you're starting with a title. A lot of times I feel like we're tempted, especially because of the Nashville method and that influence in music, to wait for that last line of the chorus and here's your title payoff. I like seeing people move that around a little bit because, you know, if you watch a film, a lot of times there's title payoff in that genre too, and it happens like anywhere. It's really not as conventionally strict as with songwriting, where it's like we almost search for that title at the end of the chorus. But I want to hear more and more people maybe waiting for the bridge. Or in this example, you start off with A Little While, your title, and you're introducing the concept to us. And from there, you say A Little While again, at the end, you know, working in that tried and true Nashville method at the end of your choruses. But by the time we get to that second iteration of it, it means more. It's garnered some weight as you've led us through this journey of this song, which has so much to do with just the ephemeral nature of living things and life experiences and how things don't last forever. And it becomes a more of an emotional subject matter, but we have to go through that journey to get there. I really like how, like I said before, you're giving us more depth with repetition instead of just feeling like it's monotonous to hear some kind of repetitions. I really do love that. It's kind of reminding me of the song Suzanne by Leonard Cohen, where he starts off the song by introducing us to Suzanne. He says his name, or he says her name right at the beginning, and then we're given more and more character details as it goes on. And we learn a little bit more about this character with every single verse. And we get to know this character almost as if, like, this is your lover. You know, it becomes more and more intimate as every single verse goes through. So I want to see more and more people doing this technique with repetition. Those are my first thoughts. Jamie?
Yeah, great. There's a lot as ever. And I think when I hear those lines to start with, like you said, I went, oh, he's gone straight in with it. But that's almost like going straight in with a chorus. I think if you deliberately do so, you might imply to other people, provided you sound good and the song sounds good, you have a nice voice, you might imply to another people like, okay, I have more to offer than just this title. Because they'll know your title and they'll see it straight away. And now they go, okay, well, what does that mean to this singer? And you talk really nicely about how it is kind of ephemeral, but the passing of time, and that opens it up when it's not too specific lyrically. Again, we talked about the first song not being too specific lyrically, but that allows us to kind of lean in. It's almost like he's like, okay, here's the garden I've created for you. This is what I've called it. This is how it sounds and this is how it feels. But what do you want to get out of it? And to me, I kind of know him a little bit. So I drifted into kind of his world and maybe what he's thinking. But it is kind of non-physical. It's like a non-logical song in that sense. It's trying to talk about the things that we don't come into contact with every day on our phones, on our computers, on our emails, like looking at the time or traveling, all these kind of things we do, especially as I'm doing right now in Australia. Everything is kind of by the hour. And that links, again, when you leave that open, I've stumbled across time in both senses, like time as he's talking about it, which is kind of, you can't touch it. It's wonderful. It's sacred. It's time for your family, your friends, your loved ones. And the other side of time is me going, I'm so stressed right now because this hasn't worked, or this is supposed to be happening, or I should be here, or what time is this? So without meaning to, maybe, but we should give him the credit, I think, for this one. He's touched on something that's really at the heart of everything and done so in a way that's interesting. And I think a few of the things I had in terms of just for this one is his syllables. I think sometimes, this is why it's frustrating out of love, is that you hear someone using syllables so beautifully at the end of their lines. And then some, I think with the word child, I could be wrong, but I think with the word child, he kind of extends it more than its natural meter. Whereas if you use a word properly, you know its natural meter, meaning coming from iambic pentameter, which is how it was supposed to be. It's like da 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 da. I think that's right. But either way, the meter of a word is how it's supposed to be set. You don't go like this in English. You speak in different ways for those words. So it's trying to find the character of the words. So that was one thing I said. Be very careful about your rhythms and syllables because they're so important. You do such a great job, Scott, Mark. You do such a great job in a lot of your lines that make sure when you're ending them, they are really, really, really as they should be.
Right. Yeah. The meter, that was one thing that I picked up on more subconsciously, but hadn't thought to talk about. That I love that little bit, how we're wanting to balance, like making sure that things sound speakable, things sound legible, things sound like common vernacular. But at the same time, we're not just speaking. We're not just talking. We're singing about this subject. There's the meter to it. If you want a good example of iambic pentameter and how to shift this meter, normal conversation to something that sounds a little bit more rhythmic, read some Shakespeare. Don't even have to read like 100%. An entire play, but just like read an act and lean into the way that he writes, because it takes actors a lot of training to get to a point where they can perform Shakespearean works because of the fact that there is this funny kind of formality that comes across with the iambic pentameter, where it's somewhere in between like speaking a line and reading a line and it being prose. It's this sort of middle ground in between something poetic and something that you would hear in day-to-day life. So that's my recommendation, because I really agree, like with this particular example, the thing that stood out to me a lot was the line about flowers in full bloom and summer's end too soon, because of the fact that it's in meter, it's simple, it's not trying to be anything that it's not, it's speakable, and the phonetic sound of those lines works really well within a melody. That's what I want people to prioritize more than anything, honestly. We're not writing poetry. We're not speaking. We're singing. So that melody is really going to be king.
Yeah. And when you're writing melodies, you can often extend words. And of course, I'm not saying you can't put a run in, so turning a four-syllable word into a 15 one, maybe with all these kind of runs. But I think there's a natural amount that you can extend a word. And we're not going too hard on Mark here, because as you can hear, like, he does a great job of styling those out and singing them in a way that is interesting and actually makes you think more about the words. But yeah, just being careful, and rhythm is such a huge thing. I did an in-person session with Aisha recently in London before I came to Australia, and all we did was just talk about rhythm for an hour and a half. And I talked about the Max Martin hand, which is, for those of you who don't know, check out Max Martin. But it's when he was recording Backstreet Boys or Britney or Katy Perry, continuously the singers would see from the vocal booth him, like, the back of his palm kind of clicking like a metronome almost, and almost like he's kind of slapping them at the back of his hand, because he was just saying rhythm, 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 rhythm. And even like Emily's saying, is it does take a lot of training to perform Shakespeare. I don't think in my memory I've ever done it, or ever done it well or consciously. Did it when I was a kid, but that's also interesting, because that's kind of halfway between speaking and performing. And as Griff Hosker talked about, Shakespeare is supposed to be performed, not read. So if you get a chance, watch people who are wonderful, like Royal Shakespeare Company. There's a few all over the world as well. American guys would have some really good examples too. Just watch how that's done. And I know it seems silly, because it is not songwriting, but how do you deliver something that's slightly odd in a way that seems natural? That's all that Shakespeare is. Rhythm and meter was one thing. And one lyric, I think, I believe in your smile. That is just an incredible lyric. And what he did was go, I believe in your smile. Kind of like you're in the moment of them thinking it. So thinkability is, I believe, I'll say it again, I believe in your smile. That affirmation of what you're thinking is beautiful. And the beauty and the simplicity of the song was what I found is a common theme for Mark Scott. He started with a guitar and a vocal, and we're going to see slowly, slowly that progression. But yeah, just wonderful.
Love it. We've got one more tune. This is called Fading Stars.
Is it me, or have I spent my whole life waiting for the parts of me that I thought I'd lost? Years ago I wished that I had known the counting tears just leads me straight back home. As time passes, my dreams and chances, they'll burn everlasting. Even fading stars are brighter than the dark. Now I turn to face my own tomorrow, looking back I can see how far I've come. Years ago I wish that I had known that when we try we can make our lives our own. As time passes,
dreams and chances, they'll burn everlasting. Even fading stars are brighter than the dark. Now I look towards a life worth living, filled with love, filled with something new. Years ago I wished that I had known that all I needed was the chance to grow. As time passes, my dreams and chances, they'll burn everlasting. Even fading stars are brighter than the dark. As time passes, my dreams and chances, they'll burn everlasting. Even fading stars are brighter than the dark.
All right, that was Fading Stars by Scott Rustin. And there's a reason why we put the song at the end. This particular tune feels more recent, more realized, and more practiced in terms of your craft as a songwriting. Not to say that those other two songs don't have a lot of wonderful qualities to them, but this one in particular, I feel like whenever I'm like clenching my chest, like where my heart is while I'm listening to a song, that's my indicator that it's a really good lyric. And that hook, that's one of the best hooks that I've heard in a long time. The fading stars are brighter than the dark line.
That hit me hard.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing payoff. Amazing payoff for that particular line. And it makes me want to talk about something that I talk about a lot, although I haven't spoken on the podcast yet. And that is a particular philosophy that comes from Bruce Springsteen. There's a quote where he famously said that you have to give them blues in the verse and gospel in the chorus.
Say it again, because it's actually worth saying three times on this show.
You have to give them blues in the verse and gospel in the chorus.
I mean, we could do a whole show, I think, on that. But again, for people, it's that Subway Skyscrapers. And with this particular song, I also agree. I think for me, there's something that stuck out for this song, and it's called the tightrope, meaning there were, at least in the first half of the song, maybe in the second half, I did fall off the tightrope a tiny bit, but the first half, it's really hard to explain this properly, so I'll do my best. But when there are no mistakes, and not just no mistakes, but when the melody's wonderful, the singing's great, the recording is beautiful, the lyrics, the arrangement as well, when all of these things are kind of gently floating down the river together, almost unnoticed, that is the beauty of almost not realizing you're walking on a tightrope. You're up in the air when you're listening to someone's song. You're kind of bought into their world, but he's done it so gently. And as you said, the progression through his songs, this is really mature because he's got worked in beautifully. I call them like the four elements. He's got a bass really well kind of thought out, arranged and recorded. Underneath the guitar, which is percussive and harmonic, and then the strings coming under the vocal. I think he has a couple of harmonies in there as well. Might not be easy to hear on the podcast, but when you have that, obviously a great vocal too. When you have all those things, you're on the tightrope. Someone's got you up there and they're holding you in the air with their song. And I think maybe in the second verse, I heard like a little mic click or something, or because he's recording the demos at home, as we all are. And that was the only time I went, oh yeah, I'm in a song. And Emily and I came on and we knew the songs we were going to do. We know what we're going to do. We talked about the feedback before the show, but still listening to that, I was kind of up on the tightrope. And I think those things are so important. blues in the verse, gospel in the chorus, subway, skyscrapers, but actually it's very different because it's saying you want to put people in a state of malaise, in a state of sadness, in a state of confusion, almost like when you watch a film, the start is normally what's creating what's called cognitive dissonance, where there's a fight scene or something goes wrong, or there's a classic like cliffhanger, anti-cliffhanger, if you will. But giving them the blues is that. It's like, well, what's going to happen? What is this? I remember with my girlfriend, we watched a show and it was really terrible. I won't name it, but the whole thing we were drawn along by was we didn't know how this happened. That was it. There was just a mystery and everything was almost laughably funny. But that can be, I think, a bad use of cognitive dissonance, is like they just use mystery as a thing to pull you through. Whereas what Scott did was he used quality and mystery to get me there. And those things are really rewarding, as opposed to just, again, hammering someone with a controversial lyric or shouting at someone, that they're really cheap ways to get someone's attention. Whereas I think the tightrope is that really subtle, beautiful, like four elements plus writing, lyrics, delivery. Talk about the emotion in his voice as well. That's something maybe we haven't said exactly, but Emily and I have both felt every time we hear his songs, but the emotion in his voice is really, really beautiful. I'll have a couple more things, but I feel like we've both got a lot to say on this one, so I'll let you jump on it.
I think to bounce off of what you're saying, one thing that keeps me enamored with this particular tune is just the amount of humanity that you have in it, with the more gravelly vocal fry, with these lyrics that are a little bit more confessional, right? The speaker, the character that you're building up is not, for example, like a character that would have been portrayed by like Katy Perry or something. This is not happy at all. And I wanted to say that because I feel like a lot of people see these examples of these different rising stars in one particular echelon of pop music, and they think that those are all of the characters that are available for them to play. And
such a good
that's
point.
That's not true. I love seeing like this interesting range of character. And one way you can get this across is with, like I've said before, I love that gravelly tone of voice. But then also the fact that a lot of your lyrics are past tense, right? They're written in a way that are more reflective. It's less of this like kind of immediate, like, we're in the moment, we are the moment, we're having frivolous fun and it's pop music kind of space. And it's more like, I've been through so much, here's my heart, I'm putting my heart on a platter for you type of writing. And it's all very reflective and talking about subjects that really feel like you're drawing from your own personal experience too, just given the emotionality of the song. I love it. And I love how you're balancing the speakability that people can relate to, like we talked about earlier, with a little bit more depth of metaphor. Like I said, you have more depth of metaphor in that hook, in that lovely payoff with fading stars are brighter than the dark. This tiny little fragment of hope that you're holding on to is just so beautifully portrayed with that particular lyric. That was what stood out to me the most. It's just, it seems like you're taking a lot of that craft from prior songs that we've listened to, prior songs that you've written, and you're just adding even more. You're layering on top of what you already know how to do with a lot more depth of metaphor. So it keeps it relatable, like this nice little balance of what we're talking about this entire time, where it's relatable and speakable, but also interesting. And you're giving me metaphors that I don't hear every day. It's great. And it gets increasingly optimistic too, as we go along. And who doesn't love a feel-good ending that starts off with something sad, you know? It just plays to our expectations in a really good way.
That's also the beauty of this episode, I think, is that we've heard where he started, or obviously I threw this on him as like, we'd love to do a feature on you, send us some of your stuff, but he sent us some songs, we can see some clear progression. But I was interested in trying to throw another color on what you said about, as much as we love Katy Perry, I think that frivolous fun in the moment, like California Girls is a genius move, right? But that doesn't serve a lot of people over the age of 15, really. We can dance and we can enjoy it, so maybe it does. But I kind of feel like you talked about conscious rappers or artists that push the boundary. I feel like these songs are almost, if you take an American Indian tribe, you've got the kids playing by the river or by the fire, and then you have the parents who are kind of still in that, like involved and touching. And then Scott and Mark's songs, they feel like the elders sat at the back of the village, kind of looking over with wisdom and deliberately trying to package really beautiful, subtle and difficult things and give them to others and go, what does this make you feel? What does this make you think about? And only then will the kind of kids and the parents think, oh, you have to really produce something beautiful to do that, like the tightrope, but they'll kind of go, oh, wow. Okay, what am I missing sat in my position in life? And what am I missing only focusing on this? And when you were speaking, it kind of made me think that pop music, pretty much all of it, is really still the kids playing by the river, maybe not even the parents by the fire, you know, and having those voices of the overarching kind of wisdom. And again, just to bring it back to that lyric, but yeah, fading stars are brighter than the dark. I've got that right. I remember it. Just when I heard that this morning, I was like, oh, okay. We have a song on our hands. We have a writer on our hands, because whether it's effortless or not, I don't know, but I think he puts a lot of time and love and work into his writing and always has. And even just listening to these three songs and all the songs I've heard of his from the start of the show. And this is just a kind of small Petri dish, a small experiment of Mark Jones, Scott Rustin, whereas I have the whole thing in my mind, like the very first things we spoke about up until this day. So I can't do justice to that properly because I've been lucky enough to kind of chat to Mark enough, but there are so many things in this song. And I think, again, Nashville payoff and imagery are beautiful. The use of strings is really interesting, because if you listen to like SZA, my favorite song of hers is the Black Panther theme. Yeah. Maybe the night that my dreams might let me know. And you think, like, you look at the lyrics and the context and all the beautiful things, like Chadwick Boseman, Kendrick Lamar, everyone that's involved. But I remember working with an artist recently, and a friend of mine was sat down to produce with her. And we realized that it's the strings in that chorus that actually make you hooky, which is crazy to think about. And then even Georgia Smith, I remember listening to some of her stuff and going, oh, what's that there? That's strings. So him using strings, I think of it like bedding or padding your vocal, is extremely clever. And the reason that works is because they are so emotive. They can cut you probably cleaner than a vocal might. But at the same time, they can be very warm and sound similar to a vocal. So it's kind of that string version of your own voice. And seeing that all put together, so we have, again, bass, vocal, strings, guitar, harmonies. The use of strings is beautiful. Got the Nashville payoff, the imagery. We have him up on the tightrope. We have pace and drama, which is just me kind of throwing wide words that you'll understand. But I would kind of challenge you guys to think, okay, whether I'm this character or not, am I an elder by a sat behind the fire watching everyone else work? Is that my kind of songwriting? Or am I kind of in the war of life and trying to account for people behind me and ahead of me? Or am I just sat throwing around in the river? And you can decide yourselves what part of the industry that is. But I think what we've heard today is really beautiful, of someone who's trying to be that, trying to be quite wise and removing himself for the benefit of others. That's how I describe his writing.
I love that last sentence. And I'm glad that you also brought more attention to the strings. That's one thing that stood out to me. Although I wasn't thinking of any contemporary examples, which is cool. It's cool that you brought all of those up, because I was listening to the song, and the way that you wait until the second verse to bring in any string arrangement at all, but you start off with more of a sparse guitar accompaniment, it really evoked the song Yesterday by the Beatles in my head, where you start with that really simple, sounds like it might not even be a George Harrison part, it might be a Paul part, you know, really just simple, getting the job done is what he's all about. And then later in the arrangement, we bring in the George Martin string arrangement. It reminds me not only of the kind of arrangement that you hear in that song, but also the subject matter and the mood, where it's this forlorn sort of looking back at your life type of tone. Like, I just kept thinking of that tune. Yeah.
Yesterday as well is a great one because of that. It's just the name Yesterday. And I think Mark would love this comparison with the Beatles, because that's something that was kind of jumping out at me through listening to these songs. Even just the name Yesterday, it makes you think back. And Fading Stars is sad as hell. I have to say that as well. I think I understand why people listen to pop music, because it's happy and it's hopeful. And you dance and moving your body. Like, I've just been at a wedding the other night, and dancing with a huge amount of people is so wonderful. It's that kind of shared shit, the hive mind almost, of everyone like buying in and going, I don't know who you are and I've never met you and I think you're from a different country and I maybe will never see you again, but like, let's just smile and dance. To me, that's also these songs. You can listen to them and feel like you know him. And I probably have an extra sense of that having spoken to him a couple times, and we hear from him through his songs all the time. And it's crazy. He actually loves songwriting far more than most people I know. The kind of people that I hear from now, they're actually out there doing it without any support or without anyone telling them they're good or paying or not paying them for it. They're just doing it because it's a function of what's important to them. So really special to have had these songs. And again, I just want to highlight the progression from a guitar in the back of his kind of spare room and a sort of vocal into his iPhone to what we're hearing today, which is this kind of it perfectly imperfect demos, whereby you can hear the song and go like, well, yeah, that's, you almost can't beat that because it's what it is. And the unity of him having those slightly rough approaches to really beautiful songs, I actually feel like lends himself better than a clean cut production with 808s and trap hats. It's like, that's not this world at all. This is way too beautiful, I think, for that.
It's interesting. You're making me think of something that I hear people throw around a lot, is this concept of demo-itis, where you make a demo and it's rough and it's raw and maybe there's a couple notes off tune, but it's the passion take. And then you go into the studio and you try and record your final version of it, and it just, you're not in the same mindset of capturing imperfection, and you lose something there. I think the remedy to demo-itis is just letting your song be a little bit more loose, letting it be more free, and letting it be what it is too, and not getting too attached to that demo. And in addition to that, I would challenge you to release your demos when you have a really, really good one. Make it a bonus track.
That's what we want to hear.
Exactly. Release the demos. Release your versions of your song where you're going to have perhaps a different emotional quality, perhaps a better emotional quality on some lines. We want to hear your vault tracks. The world needs your art. Just put it out. Put it all out.
Yeah, because I think the people that listen to this show, people that are on this show, we're not here to create perfect art. Or maybe I am still in the pursuit of trying to find those really commercially viable, clean-cut records that will go and do this, that, the other. But my love for doing that is hugely fed by people who are not even close to afraid to share their demos. And actually, in seeing that, I feel like you see what real songwriting is supposed to be. Because like Emily's saying, I've seen songs where there's two versions of the same song and I go, well, version two is best, easily. So that there's definitely some things where you go, okay, there's a minimum viable threshold, meaning like you have to record a vocal in some way so we can hear it, right? There are some things you don't want on a track, but the passion take is a great way of thinking about it. And there are so many records we love, like Nirvana records. He was tricked into recording them the way that they were. Butch Vig tricked him into doing that, and that gave us the songs we have. And that's not to say you need to do that, but release your music, because I don't think we're in a world that needs more squared away, almost too perfect to have any emotion, because they don't want to be outside of the algorithm or outside of what's interesting. And I will say, I'll try and predict, because I hope it happens, that we have more songs like this that sound like a 60s record, and they are crackly and they're a bit wrong, but we can learn to love them because they're really important. And maybe there are kids now that are listening to music and that's what they want, and what they're going to gravitate towards is like a Bon Iver, Ben Howard remake of something weird as hell. And I really respect, just very quickly, similar to Mark in some ways, but not in all ways, Ben Howard is someone that came up writing incredible music, quite folky music that ended up being very commercially viable, very popular all over the world. And then he released a few records that make absolutely no sense. And I think that's what's important, that someone is smart enough to go, I could do the same thing again and maybe get all of the financial gain and all of these things that are not important, But no, he produced a record that was really painful, very dark, and very important to him. So those are the things that Mark probably leaning towards, I think, the difficulties in life and the yearnings that we all have. So it's like a salve for that in my mind. And I wanted to celebrate someone with Emily, has been on every show so far that we've done together, but also is kind of like the heart of what we're doing. And I'm realizing I'm hearing from more and more of you guys like this. But Mark's a particularly special one who charges out and just throws his songs at us with no regard for anything. He's just a great writer in my mind.
Right. I love it. The writing is incredible. On top of that, there's something that he's doing really well that we just spoke on a little bit, but I want to put particular words in your head of this idea of curating your imperfections. And I've noticed how there's been a big shift in terms of the art that people put out and also how people like to present themselves on social media, just since 2020, where before the pandemic, there was a much, much bigger emphasis on curating perfections in your life, right? Here's the expensive viral coffee that I got with my perfect gourmet avocado toast and I'm on vacation. And then we were all put in a position for over a year where life was more imperfect than we're used to. And a lot of people who are used to having big production teams too in the music world started experiencing a more level playing field in terms of the creation because they don't have the same access to the same resources. So I want everybody to continue to remember that and just curate your imperfections. It's so much more interesting that way. And it's so much more like connecting too. Like the point of social media is to get all of us connected. But when we're all putting up a front, like our lives are perfect, it's not really doing that. So continue to curate imperfect moments that are special to you is what I'd like to urge you to do.
Beautiful. And very, very relevant. The people that I've spoken to, people that reach out, send a comment or a question, or send in songs, and especially those that don't, that are just listening. That's what people want to hear. That's why they're connecting to this, why good people connecting to good music. Find your thing, do your thing. If you're a writer, then try and understand the pressures that you're feeling. And if you need to go and release stuff or put out songs or put together release schedules, then please do that. We're not saying don't, but just consider what you can do that's really good for you before you then put it out online and it's amplified or completely ignored. Like, what value can you get from it before it's released, before it's up to someone else to tell you how you feel about your songwriting? Those are the things I want to impart.
Yeah, it's interesting. That last little thing you said, or completely ignored. The cool thing is, if you have a goal to put yourself out there in a bigger way and you want to make this more of a career and you feel a little bit discouraged at first with your viewership or your listenership, then eventually when you get to that point where you actually have a hit, guess what? You have back catalog for your new fans to explore. So think about those moments in the future and don't be discouraged. A good example of that would be Lizzo, who put out her song that would eventually break her in 2017. And then that particular song, Truth Hurts, did not get to number one until 2 years later. So if you just keep putting in the work, things like that do happen.
Of course. And actually a really good point is that which you said is even as a songwriter. So not just as someone who's releasing music publicly, but every song that I've written up until this date, because I've had nothing that's noteworthy yet, that's been put out or released. Every song that I write up until the day that something does go, if it ever goes, is valuable. Every song that you write under your style that leads to something that's bigger, people will suddenly become interested in terms of those becoming assets. And maybe that's a bit crass because people here are just trying to write. Some people are just understanding their writers and wanting to do that. But if you are looking to be professional, that's a practical tip. And it's spending enough time writing that you are writing of a high quality, but not putting so many resources and expectations into each song that you release that you burn out after five, as opposed to writing those 50 or 60 that you need to get one.
Yeah, that's a great point. Think of them as more like pancakes, where you have to you have to warm up the griddle for a little bit, you know, and you might put out a few songs that are a bit misshapen, but they still taste great, you know, that might have some flaws. And then eventually you get to that point where you really understand your craft. And either way, regardless, like one thing that I've learned a lot from Jamie in particular is that even if I'm writing down a bad lyric, pen to paper, even if I end up not using that, a lot of times it's a stepping stone to my next good idea. And it's part of the process, and I wouldn't have gotten to that good idea without it. So being able to honor those things, even if you don't end up using them or they don't really end up going anywhere that is in line with your wildest dreams right away. Think about that.
Stunning. Stunning. And in conclusion from today, obviously thanks to Emily for doing a great job of bringing out different aspects of how I think about songwriting, or highlighting things in a more interesting way than I could. And obviously we want to say thanks to everyone who listens. Every single person. You don't need to email or message us, DM, send a song to be loved. We love everyone equally. That's how we do it, because everyone is part of this and they drive it and they get it going. So thank you. But to our main man, Mark Jones, Scott Rustin, just thank you. I feel like done our best to express that gratitude today, but very simply, thank you. If there's anything else you want to say, Emily?
Yeah, once again, Mark Jones, aka Scott Rustin, thank you so much. Listening to your music is an inspiration to me, and I absorb it, and it helps me to continue doing what I'm doing, hearing people doing their best, or at least working with a high level of enthusiasm. I love how contagious that is. Keep up the great work. If anybody would like to submit music to, we're completely open to that, completely open to people submitting questions to. I'm happy to answer any kind of questions to the best of my ability about technical songwriting. And we've been branching out a lot into creative lifestyle too, which is something that I love to talk about. So any kind of questions, I'll take a stab at it. Absolutely welcome.
This will be where it is. So again, questions, and we're going to answer them weirdly. I think there's really quick answers we can give, and they're kind of already out there. But if you have something that's a bit more developed, then that'd be really cool too. So thank you very much. This one's gone on longer because I think Emily and I have got so many things even that we didn't cover today that we're like, oh, that could be a whole other episode, or we'll make sure we bring those up as we go through. But also trying to nail the basics, which you probably would have heard today. So lyrical deep diving, inspiration meter, I guess the tightrope, things like that, melodic contrasting, all of these things that apply to every song definitely apply to these. But thank you, Mark. Really hope this is as gratifying to you as your songs have been to us and the others listening. Yes, emotionally, I shall sign this one off and we'll say goodbye until next time.
Hello there, sweet listener. Thank you for listening to today's show. And I just wanted to say, we do have an Instagram. I know that some of you guys are quite interested in just sending those private emails, and I promise you they are absolute gold dust to me. And I love receiving those emails when people get time to send them with their songs, with their questions. And mainly, I love your stories about how you're listening to the show, where you found it, what it means to you. Those are the things I'll probably take to my grave, to be completely honest. But if you want to be out there on social media, please get in touch. I wish I knew that pod on Instagram. We're going to be getting stuff up on YouTube as well. Reach out. Send me a DM. Send me a voice note. Send me a video. I want to see you guys. I want to see your shows. I want to hear your songs. Thank you again for listening to the show. If you want to be involved and get full value for your creative process, please do so. But if you're one of those wonderful people that just likes to sit and observe, I know you're out there, and thank you so much for your attention. It really does mean a lot. So no need to get in touch, but if you feel like you want to be involved, please do so. Much love and bye-bye.